If you've traveled to the United States recently, you know the drill. You wait in line, either in your car, in an airport, shuffle up to the front, present your documents, state your case, and answer some questions. Recently, you might have been asked a simple but surprising question. Have you ever used cannabis? You might not have known the implications of answering it. More than ever, lawyers are hearing of Canadians facing lifetime bans from America for simply having admitted to using pot in the past. Not to carrying it into the U.S., not to having smoked it in the car on the way to the border, just admitting to having used it, ever. So who gets asked this question? And what are your rights if they ask you the next time you're crossing? Oh, and if lawyers are seeing an increase in bans now, what happens at the border on October 17th when pot is legal in Canada? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story.
Just be prepared for anything at the border. We're going into the great unknown here, and it is impossible to tell what to do about it.
Perrin Grauer is a reporter with Star Metro Vancouver who's been examining exactly what's going on at the border these days. So, Perrin, what's happening with weed at the border?
Folks who are traveling into the United States from Canada maybe ask a number of questions, one of which is, have you ever used cannabis? And answering yes will land you with a lifetime ban, admission to the United States, which means if you are ever interested in making that journey again, you have to get a waiver. It costs you $500 or $600. It's a temporary waiver, and you'll have to end up doing that for the rest of your life. It's a surprise for a lot of Canadians who are not criminalized here in their own country for it or expecting cannabis to be legal soon to find that the U.S. has a fairly different perspective on their drug use.
Has it always been this way?
This has been going on for at least 15 years, so this isn't new to this presidential administration. The change is that far more people have started to have this experience. The lawyer that I'd spoken to said 15 years ago, he was looking at one or two cases of this a year. Now he's seeing one or two cases of this per week.
At the border, they don't ask everybody this question, though.
Mm-hmm. It's true, and as with a lot of what happens with law enforcement, the criteria that will land you with this line of questioning is not entirely clear. From what I can tell, it seems like there is some sort of profiling going on. Young people, folks who look like they may be snowboarders, for instance, I've been told, are more often taken aside and asked this line of questioning. Folks who look like they may have used cannabis, whatever that means in the eyes of the officers. Speaking with the Customs and Border Protection Services media person, they say that they make determinations on who to ask based on information that they have available to them.
Did you get any sense when you talk to anybody if there's any directive behind this?
What's new is that it's not just folks who have admitted to a border officer to smoking weed that are being deemed inadmissible to entry. It's folks who are involved in the cannabis industry. So what we're talking about here is not, you know, dispensary workers or folks who even necessarily grow cannabis, but people who make agricultural equipment that is eventually to be used in the cannabis industry, people who maybe have some soil blend that's perfect for growing cannabis. That's new, and that suggests that there is a directive that has changed.
So it's not just pot users, it's people who work in the cannabis industry, which I've read dozens of newspaper and magazine articles about exactly how big this industry is about to become. So it's a not insignificant population facing this question.
That's right. And if we go back to 2014, the Assistant Secretary of the Bureau of International Narcotic Law Enforcement Affairs in the U.S. said to the U.N., the U.S. is going to have to come to terms with the fact that different countries are going to have different attitudes towards drug policy. And he said, we must have tolerance for those different policies. That seems to be a far cry from what's actually happening. This law enforcement agency, Customs and Border Protection, they're not the ones making these decisions, right? This is coming from the top. So Department of Homeland Security, Department of Justice, but none of them are willing to give any kind of sense of what the end goal is and what the criteria might be for a person being asked these questions.
Okay, so practical question then. I'm crossing the border. I get stopped for whatever reason. I haven't shaved in a few days, and I get pulled aside and asked if I've ever used pot. What are my rights?
Well, your rights are to not answer that question. Even if they take you into secondary, which is when they pull you out of your car, haul you inside, a lot of these folks to whom that happens are in there for hours. And they will tell you that you do have to answer these questions. But the fact is, you don't. The worst that can happen, if you don't answer that question, if you say, I want to withdraw my request to enter the United States, is that they turn you around and send you home. They can do what is called a lookout on your file, which means this person is a person of interest, maybe ask them some more questions next time they come through the border. But there is no criminal consequence to saying, you know what, I'm pleading the fifth, I'm not going to answer that. The worst thing you can do is answer yes, because that immediately will get you a lifetime ban. The problem is they can now look at your cell phone, computer, they can check you out on social media if your profile is public. If there's any indication that you have used cannabis, and you answer no, well, now you've lied to a federal officer, lifetime ban. Best thing to do, turn your phone off, or even better, buy a border burner and refuse to answer the question if asked.
So give me an example of somebody that's impacted by this who had no intention and thought they were following the law.
Well, this fellow Jay Evans, who I interviewed about a month back, he works for a company called Kirtan. They make agricultural equipment, so we're talking about harvesting machines. He and a couple of his engineers, both of whom had spotless criminal records and Nexus passes, which is, you know, the sort of express pass to jump across the border, you know, pulled up and were asked why they were going down to the United States. They let slip at some point that they worked in the cannabis industry here. They were meeting some design firm south of the border to talk over a new design. The product hadn't been designed, hadn't been manufactured, hadn't been produced, hadn't been sold. And yet, they were deemed to be drug traffickers in the eyes of Customs and Border Services. So that fellow, thinking that he was just building his business, he's an entrepreneur, he's bringing money to the economy, he's bringing some of it over to the United States, is now in the position of having to seek a $600 waiver anytime he wants to cross the border for the rest of his life.
And he's making, to be clear, farming equipment, basically.
It's literally these big, shiny, stainless steel machines that cut down plants.
You're in BC, and Washington State obviously has legal recreational marijuana. So once pot is legal in BC and it's legal in Washington State, are we still going to have this sort of third degree at the border when you can smoke it on both sides of the line?
So two things about that. The fact that it is legal on both sides of the line means we're going to see more of this, not less. So if you look at what's happened with the cannabis industry, the folks who are from Canada that are being given admissibility for working in the cannabis industry, that just happened recently. And the folks that I've spoken to seem to think it's because CBP officers live in Blaine. They see the dispensaries there that say Canadians welcome. They see the Canadian license plates in the parking lot there. They realize that there's going to be more of this, not less. And speaking with the Customs and Border Services, they've said our mandate's not changing. Just because legalization is happening in Canada, don't think that that's going to mean anything for U.S. drug policy.
Have Canadians been given any direction from any level of government on what they should do when they get this question or what they should do when they're crossing the border?
So this is a point that I find particularly galling. We have federal politicians who, because of diplomatic immunity, are ostensibly immune to persecution of this kind at the border, giving advice to average Canadians. So we have Ralph Goodale saying, you got to tell the truth at the border. We have Bill Blair saying the same thing. That is not only irresponsible advice, but it's not a full explanation of what the rights of Canadians are. I'm not clear what the end goal is there, why it wouldn't be explained what Canadians are entitled to as international travelers. I mean, this is our biggest trading partner. This is our next door neighbor. If there can't be harmony between the two, then at least the Canadian government should be giving Canadians a sense of what it is they're entitled to say and not say at the border to protect themselves.
So one thing that stands out to me, obviously, aside from people in the medical or I guess just the marijuana industry now, is our politicians who have openly admitted to smoking pot. Do they get asked these questions?
It seems to be that there is some unspoken rule that there's a certain class of Canadian who is free from hassle. So not only do we have, as I suggested earlier, diplomatic immunity being problematic insofar as the folks who are telling Canadians what to do are not subject to the same rule of law as those average Canadians, but there seems to be some kind of free pass that folks who have some sort of diplomatic connection get when crossing the border. The example would be, of course, Margaret Trudeau, who is, like her son, publicly admitted to using drugs in the past, but was welcomed with open arms in 2016 to the White House for a state dinner following Prime Minister Trudeau's election. One question now, however, is does that sort of unspoken amnesty remain given what one person I spoke to calls the walling off of America? We have a very different administration setting very different precedents, and it's completely unpredictable what's coming around the corner. So the answer is, I don't know. No one knows. And it is, frankly, quite startling.
How can we draw up a framework for this that works? What needs to happen to put a process in place where at least people know what to expect?
I would say all bets are off. That's the best advice that anyone can sort of give. Just be prepared for anything at the border. I think with the criteria for who is going to be asked these questions remaining completely in the dark, it's important just for people to know their rights. Everybody is a little back on their heels trying to figure out how our two countries are going to communicate with these two huge developments, both, you know, the current administration south of the border and legalization over here. How are those two things going to interact? Is it going to be innocuous? Is it just going to go back to normal? Or is it going to be like putting baking soda in vinegar? We don't know.
I guess it gets added to the long list of things that we find out October 18th, the day after pot becomes legal. Until then, you don't have to answer the question, and you can say, I withdraw my request to enter the United States?
Correct. Yeah, that's really the best and the only thing to do if you don't feel comfortable. If you're a cannabis user or you have ever used it and you don't feel comfortable bold-faced lying to a U.S. federal officer about that, then yeah, your best bet is to withdraw your request to enter. Try again later.
Thanks, Perrin.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
That was the big story. Other topics we're working on for this week and next include the impossible work of Canada's biggest Indigenous police force, the falling, finally, rates of unfounded sexual assault cases in cities throughout Canada, and what happens to your loyalty points, your Aeroplan miles, etc., when you die? Can you leave them to somebody? If you have a topic you think we should be covering, you can contact us at thebigstorypodcast.ca. You can find more of our episodes there, too. Or just hit us up on social media at Big Story Podcast on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. And of course, you can get all our episodes wherever you get your podcasts. You can subscribe for free. You can rate us, review us, and tell your friends to take a look. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thanks for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.